Welcome, everyone, to the latest episode of the Pharmaceutical Commerce Podcast. I'm Nico Saraceno, editor of PC. I'm pleased to be joined by Tom Cotter, Executive Director of Healthcare Ready, a nonprofit organization. Among multiple topics on today's agenda, he'll be discussing ways to facilitate solutions in the face of a disaster, including how to protect patient access to medication during these times of crisis. Tom, thank you so much for taking the time to join the show today. I really do appreciate it.
Thanks, Nico. I'm really excited to be here.
Let's just dive right in. So last month at the Healthcare Distribution Alliance's Distribution Management Conference in Indianapolis, you actually had a couple of presentations at the show. First one being about COVID-19 after action, have we learned lessons to prepare for future events? And following that session, you, alongside a colleague, also presented on ensuring supply chain resilience when crisis is the new normal. So for the listeners, would you mind just providing a brief synopsis of both those presentations?
Yeah, absolutely. Before I forget, I have to shout out my colleague, Sean, who presented with me. I think he'd be angry if I didn't do that. But the first topic was on COVID-19 after action. So really, the panel was a bunch of industry people, myself, a little academia. And we talked about the need for a very specific and focused lessons learned opportunity after COVID-19. And we focused a little less on what actually to do, because there's so many efforts right now to really understand what happened, what was good, what was bad. But I invoked the post-9/11 period, where everyone, industry and government, all came together and they were laser focused on finding solutions and ways to mitigate this danger moving forward. And we don't have that right now. I also invoked a lot from a report that Healthcare Ready actually delivered to Congress last month called the Papaya Report, which is the Pandemic and All Hazards Preparedness and Advancing Innovation Act report, where we talked about the four main themes of our posture and ways that we need to improve it. One is improving in communication and coordination between public and private sector, public and public sector, and private sector. Strengthening accountability and having alignment among programs from public sector between CDC's FEP program and ASPR's HPP, formerly HPP program, Hospital Preparedness Program. The need to incorporate equity in all of the efforts around pandemic preparedness. And then, of course, the need to increase funding for all of this. And again, if you draw a parallel between 9/11, our post-9/11 world, and now, the funding was evident. It was not controversial, and it was focused on improving things. And then the second panel, I won't go into too much on it, because I think we're going to touch on this throughout the conversation, but Sean and I presented on recent disruptions to the supply chain post-COVID-19. So we looked at Hurricane Fiona, Hurricane Ian, the Mpox outbreak, the pediatric respiratory surge event, and even the Acorn Pharmaceuticals abrupt closure, and how it affected the supply chain and how we saw these are as very different events. And we wanted to draw the conclusion that it's better to have, it's not a one-size-fits-all planning effort when it comes to supply chain disruptions, and having some nimbleness and some flexibility in the response efforts really will lend itself to recovery and eventually a return to normal.
I like that, the whole, the idea that there's no one-size-fits-all approach and nimbleness, you have to be ready to kind of adjust on the dime, so to speak. And so you kind of foreshadowed it, and I know I kind of teased it in the intro, but when it comes to being able to facilitate solutions in emergencies and in disasters, would you mind describing sort of a bit of a breakdown or a step-by-step guide on how to facilitate solutions in disasters? And even for our audience, would you mind also just kind of detailing the importance and how valuable it is in protecting patient access to medicines in crisis? Could you kind of maybe do, I guess, a combination there if you could?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, talking about problem solving in disasters. So Healthcare Ready is a 501c3. That allows us to be really nimble and quick in moving between public, private sector, even NGO sector, if there's other nonprofits who are responding. You know, Project Hope and Heart to Heart International come to mind as two major responders in the US. Information is the number one issue in an emergency response. So troubleshooting is really, the way that we approach it is really just providing information, making sure there's a common operating picture of all of the entities. And to that end, we match needs to resources. We get needs from both public sector and NGO sector, from individuals and communities, and we match them with private sector resources or NGO resources. And we're really successful at this because everybody wants to participate. Everybody approaches this with really good faith. There's a lot of goodwill after a specific crisis, but by and large, there's no set mechanisms to coordinate in a way that is really rapid and really gets to the root of the issue. So a lot of what we do is that kind of information exchange. We collect needs and we match them to resources. And I mentioned we also assist individuals because sometimes the system is a little bit too big for any one person to kind of shout out their need. And so we provide what I call wholesale and retail response. The wholesale, of course, being working with the government and hospital systems and clinic systems, and the retail being working with individuals who may have lost access to their insulin. They're unsure of what Medicare and Medicaid can provide after a disaster. We try to highlight programs like the Emergency Prescription Assistance Program, or EPAP, that allows uninsured people to have access to 30-day supply of their medicine after a disaster. And we try to tie that into a larger system where we have a little bit more visibility into the system than any individual. The other main thing that we do is we map ways that people and communities can access healthcare, because I view the healthcare supply chain and the touch points for individuals in that as a healthcare access issue. So we map out pharmacies, we map out dialysis centers, and soon we're going to map out methadone clinics for people undergoing opioid use disorder treatment and other facilities. Because again, if there's a disaster, that information isn't necessarily available to everyone. So we track that on our website on rxopen.org. And that's a free resource. And we work with a lot of private sector partners to get the data we need to analyze it and to put it in a way that the public can use. We're working on a refresh of the system with Amazon Web Services. We're collaborating with them to provide more utility and more data points to input in. It goes really, really, really well with our theme of health equity and access along the supply chain. Now, your second question about what is the importance of making sure there's good access to medicine in a crisis? Well, in any crisis, the need goes up and the ability to access goes down. And so there's a lot of work to be done in ensuring that there is equitable access. So what I mean by that is underserved communities, most vulnerable communities and members of the communities are disproportionately impacted by disaster. And there's a lot of reasons for that. They could have their mail services disrupted. They get their drugs by mail. The bus routes and ways that they go to their clinic or the pharmacy are stopped. Lyft is not available. There's physical barriers, power lines down. And I think a big one is also a single individual's ability to spend money to improve their condition after a disaster. Some people need to make the choice between drugs and infant formula. And that's a difficult choice to make, but you will do infant formula every day. Same thing with the ability to relocate. And a lot of disasters, I think a lot of emergency managers like myself historically have been very frustrated of people who haven't evacuated. But let's not forget, it takes money to evacuate. It takes a car. It takes the ability to put your job on hold. And not everyone can do that. So when we talk about access to medicine and health equity, that intersection is really critical to making sure that we're reaching, as Chip Davis from HDA says, the last inch delivery, which I really support.
Absolutely. And I know on exploring your website and such, Healthcare Ready prides itself on being this, you kind of talked about it, but a unique educational resource. Could you kind of elaborate on what really separates Healthcare Ready from maybe other organizations that provide these similar kind of services? What does your organization kind of bring to the table that may be different in this regard?
I think what's interesting about Healthcare Ready and why I'm excited to be here working with my colleagues is that we have an operational programmatic arm, and then we have a research and policy arm. And that allows us to bridge the gap between policy and implementation and being able to speak with some authority and credibility on both. And then also, like you said, and like I mentioned before, because we're a 501c3, we're allowed to operate in ways that other types of entities cannot operate, as I won't reiterate what I just said. On the programmatic operational side, I've talked a little bit about how we respond to crises, but to add to that, we also provide a lot of situation reports and threat assessments. And that's used by both emergency management, but also industry and emergency management at high levels of government to say, okay, let's say a pharmaceutical company A goes out of business today. What does that mean for the albuterol market? And that's the kind of information we try to put into one place and get it to the people who can make decisions around it. Other things that we do on the programmatic side, we also have a tool called the Community Disaster Resiliency Tool, which again is a map-based tool that overlays things like burden of disease to the concentration of healthcare facilities and the vulnerability to any particular natural disaster. And that's a big resource for folks to plan out where do they want to send aid after a disaster. You can look at this tool and plan for it and then use it as an operational tool as well. We also do a lot of preparedness trainings. Right now, we're working with many partners around the country, both at the facility and community level and government level, to build resiliency into their response mechanisms, their continuity of operations as it applies to healthcare supply chain. So that's a service that we provide in a bespoke manner. We listen to the problems. We want to say, okay, how can we help you address this? And then we develop a program with our partner. And then on the research policy side, again, you know, reflecting back on health equity, one of our key products has been the impacts of COVID-19 on communities of color. As I mentioned, these are historically underserved communities that are disproportionately impacted by a disaster, whether it's a hurricane or whether it's a disease. And so we took a look at that and demonstrated using data methodology, and you can see all this on our website, making an argument that we did not do a great job at making sure we're delivering that last inch of healthcare supply chain. Other things that we do a lot of polling. So we release yearly a national preparedness poll. This year, we partnered with BIO, the Biotechnology Innovation Organization, to see how the public interprets risk, how much they want to see their tax dollars invested in pandemic preparedness, which, spoiler alert, it's a lot. No one wants to go through what we just went through over the past couple of years and are still going through in some places. And so that's a way for us to provide lawmakers and policymakers with evidence and data to support their efforts to increase public health funding around the country. And I mentioned the Papaya report, so I won't go into detail on that, but we're facing the PAPA reauthorization this year. This report was mandated by Congress the last time PAPA was reauthorized in four or five years ago. So we also are all called on by ASPR and senior leadership and government to be a trusted entity to relay both our perspective, private sector's perspective, and then down to NGOs and community level perspective on all things public health and supply chain. So it's a lot. And that, I think that makes us unique. As I said, I think it bridges policy and implementer, but it also allows us to have our programs influenced by our research and our research influenced by our programs.
Yeah. And it sounds to me that there's certainly quite a few certain facets and chains along the actual supply chain that are covered by your organization. So it's interesting to really hear you kind of dive deep into those. And so I'm curious, before I do let you go, Tom, as we're looking ahead, you know, in the future, this is probably a bit of a broad question and feel free to answer it how you see fit, but how do you see the future of emergency response shaping out? And how would you recommend it could be improved upon? Like, what would be your feedback on that?
Well, let me first of all say, I'm optimistic. I am really optimistic. I think there's a real desire for more public health preparedness. I think the public wants to see it. The politicians, by and large, want to see it. Private sector wants it. Everybody wants this. But I think that we disagree on the methodology. And so that's where I'm really always advocating for a really focused lessons learned opportunity across government and across private sector and the overlap thereof. there were so many systems that were stood up during the COVID-19 responses that paid dividends. And I think the number one thing is the public-private partnership sector. You have private sector industries lending their time, talent, and expertise to a public sector response. And it was really successful by and large. Now, were there excesses? Were there things that didn't work out? Absolutely. But there's a lot of baby in that bathwater. And we got to make sure that as we look at the future of the country's posture around public health preparedness and pandemic preparedness, we don't lose what worked. And there's a lot of conversations going around that. And so I'm optimistic. You know, I think there's a lot of goodwill there. At the same time, we got to act fast. We've got the public health emergency ending. We've got the PAPA reauthorization coming later this year. I think that the time for analyzing what works is going to be harder after all of these things. And we've got to understand where specifically investments need to be in the private and public sector. And again, I think with the public health emergency authorities ending, there's a little anxiety around that. And I completely understand that. We're also facing a new landscape in the public sector. We've got ASPR reconfiguring. We've got CDC reconfiguring. We've got some DHS, Office of Health Security entities kind of entering their hat in the ring. We've got to get our heads around this as we're, and at the same time, we can't stop. There is no, okay, well, we'll reconfigure everything so for next time. It could happen tomorrow. So we're really building the plane as we're flying it in the air. And I think that's a really good metaphor for how we're approaching all of this environment at the moment. There's a lot to say about what the future of supply chain preparedness could be. It's really hard to predict because it's going to follow a lot of this reconfiguration and policy at the federal level that I know private sector is watching really intently. We are watching at Healthcare Ready really intently and advocating where we can to, again, keep what works. But for the next year and a half, I think Healthcare Ready is going to be really focused on collecting, sharing, operationalizing the lessons learned from COVID-19 and recent emergencies. I talked about MPOX. I talked about pediatric respiratory surge. Some of the things that worked during COVID did not work during those two responses. But a lot of the lessons learned from COVID-19, we brought into those responses, we being public health response community. Things like visibility on supply chain, things like making sure that there's better pathways between facility level up to the people who are supply chain decision makers. That worked out pretty well. Still lessons learned, of course. But we need to have a serious focused discussion about the pathway forward, and I haven't seen that yet. So we will continue at Healthcare Ready to be advocating for that, to be advocating for the inclusion of health equity in the conversation and involving, you know, non-traditional partners in the conversation as well. Free and charitable clinics, FQHCs, and logistics providers like UPS, USPS, FedEx, DHL. All of those played a big role in our COVID-19 response, and it would be a shame to lose that momentum now.
And to say that there's urgency in something like emergency preparedness would probably be an understatement, because you guys are, I feel like you're always under pressure and under the gun, so to speak, to, you know, there's, like you said, there's obviously no time to waste. So mm-hmm. It's going to be interesting to see how quickly things can develop here moving forward.
There's not going to be a time for us to stop and catch our breath. This is the new normal. We have crises after crises, and we have crises on top of crises. So it's going to take a new model of how we look at, you know, a hurricane season is no longer a hurricane season. Between climate change and our new vulnerabilities to, or our existing vulnerabilities to pandemics, we've got nothing but urgency when it comes to addressing these.
Well, Tom, thank you so much for coming on the PC podcast, sharing your insights on what it takes when it comes to properly handling these situations and how to really offer that insight and how to really help the healthcare and the medical supply chain. I really appreciate you taking the time today, and it's been a real pleasure.
Thanks so much, Nico. I just want to tell your users, your listeners, that on our website is everything I've mentioned today. And if it's not, get in touch with us. You know where to find us.
Absolutely. And for all you listeners, be sure to stay in the loop of our latest updates via our website at pharmaceuticalcommerce.com or on our SoundCloud page. Take care, everyone.